Hello everybody, this is Loki, Way of Loki, and welcome to the No Hit Podcast. Here's my job to interview extraordinary gamers in the realms of challenge running, whether that be no-hit runs, completing games in their entirety without taking a single hit or point of damage, speed runs, completing games that would normally take hours in mere minutes, and other such adventures. Today's guest is Carcinogen SDA, that's Carcinogen, C-A-R-C-I-N-O-G-E-N-S-D-A, on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. Carcy is a renowned Resident Evil challenge runner, having completed several world record speedruns in the games, as well as many no damage runs, including multiple runs with the different characters in games 1, 2, and 3, Resident Evil 1 Invisible Mode, no damage, as well as other games no damage, including Super Mario Bros., GoldenEye, and Cyberpunk 2077, to name just a few. Carcy is also a full-time streamer and content creator, as well as taking part in several AGDQs over the years. That's Awesome Games Done Quick, a charity event raising money while showcasing a whole host of different speedruns. In this course, we go through how Carcy started with speedrunning, the appeal of no damage runs, his experience playing the games with the directors of Resident Evil 2 and 3, and advice for people wanting to start runs and into streaming. Hope you enjoy this conversation with Carcinogen SDA. Right, Carcy, welcome to the podcast. Thanks very much for taking some time out. How's it going, man?
Hey, pretty good. Thanks for having me. Quickish. How exactly do I pronounce your name?
it's technically Loki, but I've been just going by Loki because it's more people, that comes to mind, more often for people, so Loki's good.
Loki, okay, cool. Loki, then. Thank you, Loki, for having me.
No worries at all, man. I would like to start with... We're going to go into a lot of Resi today, but wanted to start just a bit before that in... Is there something about the survival or horror genre that appeals to you a lot, or is it these particular games that is, like, appeals to you?
Well, I mean, it's mostly these particular games. I mean, I do like survival horror type games in general, especially as they as the designs sort of branch out from, like, Resident Evil and, like, onwards. Not a particularly big fan of, like, you know, a lot more contemporary horror games, you know, like the first person kind of walking simulator type stuff. So for me, it's mostly been Resident Evil and, like, Resident Evil style games, and then, you know, the sort of games that stem from, like, you know, the over-the-shoulder Resident Evil games and whatnot.
And what is it about the series that is the draw for you?
I've just been playing them since I was a kid. That's kind of really about it. I mean, starting to do challenge runs with them, I don't know, I just always felt like they were just like the rewards system for just, like, you know, sort of beating the game, and, you know, beating the game well just sort of lends itself. It's very conducive to, I don't know, just like gradual progression and just, like, wanting to get better over time. Because, you know, you've got your ranking systems, you've got your unlockable weapons and stuff like that. And then later on, with the advent of YouTube and speedrunning as it appeared in the mid 2000s, there were a lot of videos of people beating games fast and doing crazy things in video games. And because, you know, I was in high school at the time, and I, young, dumb, and had a lot of things that I thought I wanted to prove, you know, I just went ahead and started doing it.
What was your first speedrun, or speedrun game, I should say?
Resident Evil 1, on the DS, actually. It's the DS port of Resident Evil 1. Basically, you know, I just had, like, time after school while I was waiting on a ride home. And I had my DS, and I would just start beating the game over and over again, and then I unlocked the rocket launcher, and then it's like, wow, it would be pretty easy to beat the game without taking a hit. And then I just, like, tried doing that, and then I realized, wow, I'm actually getting faster and faster at the game. I'm just going to keep trying over and over again, you know, without really realizing much that there was, like, a full-on, like, speedrunning community. I don't know. I just went on various, like, Resident Evil fan sites and forums, just seeing who else was doing it. And eventually I ran into a player by the name of, he was going by 19Duke84 at the time, but nowadays he goes by Ekudet. Like, he's mostly retired from speedrunning for the most part, unless he, like, just decides, oh, I'm just gonna play this odd game here and there, you know. But he did a knife run of the PlayStation version of RE1 in, like, an hour and 9 minutes. And I guess he was kind of, like, looking for other people who were, like, doing the same things. And that's how I discovered, like, Speed Demos Archive from there. Like, I didn't know anything about, like, you know, speedrun rules, categories, stuff like that. Like, that's about the time that I learned that, you know, the 40-minute rocket launcher runs I was doing are not as are not comparable to, like, you know, say like a knife run done in like 1 hour and 9 minutes on PlayStation, you know. So yeah, after that I just started submitting videos to Speed Demos Archive.
How has speedrunning developed from your perspective as being in the scene for so long, should say?
Well, how has it developed? It's definitely broken a little more into popular culture as just like a ridiculous thing to do with video games, essentially. Like, it's just kind of a meme at this point, but the people who take it seriously do take it seriously, and there's like a huge community around it now. And it didn't used to be like that before, and I think a lot of that is mostly because of games done quick and, you know, similar events just like proliferating and, you know, bringing new people into speedrunning and the competition. And, you know, I think speedrunning kind of wants to go the way of esports now. Who knows where it's going to go in that regard, but probably all depends on the games and like what is most entertaining for the viewer.
Is there a place you'd like it to go?
I mean, I don't really have a place that I would like it to go. I think that it's fine as it is. I mean, as long as I can continue to do what I do and, you know, not have to feel any pressure to be like pulled into that environment, you know, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, as you mentioned, there's like several events-based things. AGTQ has been around for a good while, and sort of newish events, such as like in this Super Mario 64, like the break the record kind of things, which is sort of an interesting different take on a speedrun event, which I think's an interesting one for trying to introduce it to a more general audience, I guess, with like live competitive aspect, which might be like esports-esque. So going into these initial speedruns, it was doing the game faster and faster and faster. Was there a particular game that you went into for the purpose of speedrunning, so to speak? Like, I'm going in this because I want to speedrun this to get a record or for a particular reason?
That would have started with Resident Evil 3 on the PS1. Like, at the time, I was recording Resident Evil speedruns on YouTube, because there weren't, like, a whole lot of people doing that on YouTube. And this was before, like, you were able to just, like, upload up to 12-hour videos on YouTube. And you had to split your videos into, like, 10-minute chunks. So I would just do that, you know. My speedruns were not particularly great, but I had already done Resident Evil 1 and Resident Evil 2 on YouTube, and then I started looking at the world record for Resident Evil 3 on PlayStation at Speed Demos Archive. Well, it was for the US version. The Japanese record is different, because the Japanese version is a bit easier than the US version. And the US version record was owned by a player named Dragon Dark. And I just like started noticing like little ways that I could improve on the run. And on top of that, I was looking at the Japanese record, and I wondered if any of those strats could be extrapolated to the US version of the game. So I ran it with a slight adaptation of the Japanese route, because some enemies are still harder than they are in the Japanese version. So, you know, it's like had to expend a little bit more ammo here and there. Wound up using freeze rounds against Nemesis Type 2 in the garbage dump, things like that. And got a time that was about 5 minutes faster, and then I submitted it, and that was my first world record.
Solid marker, 5 minutes ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun. I mean, like, these days it's a little tougher to get a run on the PlayStation version, but, I mean, I reckon it might be kind of fun to try again, I don't know.
So what's the key difference? Was it just enemy health bars, or health amounts were different between the US and the Japanese version?
Enemies do more damage, enemies are more aggressive, enemies also take more damage. Nemesis in the US version, for instance, has 500 HP his first phase and 400 HP his second phase, totaling to 900 HP, as opposed to 400 and 400 in the Japanese version.
Was there a reason for the differences, or?
Well, the reason, like, a lot of Japanese games were actually made harder when released in the US so that they could compete with the rental market in the US. Game rentals at the time were illegal in Japan. I have no idea like what the status of that is now. I just know that these days a lot of Japanese game stores do sell pre-owned, and, you know, they're all like immaculate condition. So, I mean, I guess they just like kind of return it to the store, buy it again, and it's like really, really cheap. So I guess it kind of doesn't. I guess it kind of really gets rid of the need for like renting video games. I don't know. It might not even work in such a market these days, because I don't know, game rentals are just kind of not a thing anymore, and like retro games are like really cheap and very easily accessible. But circling back to the original question, sorry.
Is that right?
The US version was made more difficult in order to compete with the US rental market, because if video games were released with the Japanese difficulty, then theoretically people would just be able to beat the game in a weekend and be able to return it to the video store and just like never touch it again.
Which I could imagine happening nowadays if that was still a thing. People like trying to rush through it to get a refund, which would be...
that is the case with some games on Steam. I don't know. It's like you'd have to be really, really, really good in order to be able to play the game, beat it in like 2 hours and then return it and be like, nah, I don't want this game anymore. It was too easy.
I actually saw someone did a good video who follow Lil Aggie, who is a Sekiro speedrunner, who did a YouTube video based on that, where he got the game because he runs the all bosses category, got all the achievements, and then I believe refunded it. I can't remember if he managed to do it in time. But the premise was completing the entire game with all achievements before getting the refund from Steam.
that is absurdly funny to me. I guess that's something that, well, you certainly can't do that with every game, but I didn't even realize that it was possible to do all that in Sekiro.
Sekiro's can be made very, very short, but it's also the risk of, it's quite a pricey game, so it carries that risk if you don't get it done in the 2 hours. I think it's like 60 or 70 quid for the current moment. So a lot of the games that you've speedrun, recorded, streamed are quite old games. What's the actual... So if someone wanted to stream or play Resident Evil 2 to speedrun or to do no damage run, what is the actual setup with older consoles or games to allow that?
Well, the general you're asking about, like, just like the workflow, just like capture and you know, what display you're using and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's changed a lot over time. Speedrunners actually used to record their runs to like a VHS tape and send them off to someone to get it captured and uploaded to the internet in like an AVI format. Then with the advent of streaming, you know, you would just like get like a little composite, like a USB composite capture card, and you would have a powered splitter in order to avoid like signal degradation. Whenever you would output the video from the console to your capture card, and you know, like typically like a CRT television, one could still do CRT televisions. One could still do it the way I just mentioned, and it would be perfectly fine. Just please deinterlace your video. It looks awful. The way that I typically do it these days, though, is I have RGB SCART cables outputting from my PS2 into a RetroTINK 5X, and then I split the HDMI signal between my TV and my capture card.
So I'm just visualizing that. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotten way more simplified with the advent of more of these boutique retro upscaling solutions, such as the RetroTINK 5X or the OSSC. Like, basically, it's just changed the way that I capture video in my games, just like altogether. And not only does the picture look cleaner, everything looks sharper, but it also takes out a lot of the problems that were present with just merely capturing analog straight to your computer. And it also does future-proof it as well, because it's, you know, it's already HDMI. Everyone's got HDMI capture cards.
It's interesting to talk about like these old recording methods. Makes me think of some old speedruns or old footage of speedruns done where people set up like a camera aside to record the screen of the speedrun being done. It just made me like nostalgia of some runs I've seen.
It's been that way with some runners. I think there's been a few videos that people who submitted to like, say, Twin Galaxies, for instance, would record, upload. They just record the TV screen instead of like, you know, going out and buying a capture card, because capture cards, you know, before streaming blew up, capture cards were a relative unknown in the consumer market.
I want to go to streaming, but I'm going to leave that for just a moment. Stick with speedrunning. Of the I know there's many, many runs that you've done. Do you have any particular that comes in mind in terms of favorites or runs that you've enjoyed doing?
If I'm being honest with you, it's just like whatever game or whatever genre I find fun, I just do it. It's just like a lot of games and genres that I played growing up. I just don't feel like I want to just like stick with one particular genre of games and only that particular genre of games, because not only does it pigeonhole me, but I don't know, it might be my ADHD or something, but sometimes I might want to do a run in like an RPG, or I might want to try something with like an old Nintendo game, like, you know, do like Mario 64 someday or something like that, you know. But I mostly did survival horror up to this point because it's what people wanted to see out of me, and you know, I just want to be able to do more than just that and just, you know, sort of become a general game guy, you know what I mean?
Maybe on a different tangent, is there any particular games categories that you wish more people would speedrun, or a category that you wish more people were involved in or more competition in?
I don't know. That's like kind of a difficult one to answer, because there's already a very, very good bunch of competition and just like a lot of games. I mean, I'm not really like, you know, too huge on competition anymore. If I'm being honest, it's just more so like competition basically just stems from appeal, and it's like how it does a large subset of people, do they like this game, and does a competitive community just like sort of spawn from it? And you know, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And usually in the case of like speedrunning, for instance, there's going to be a group of people for like pretty much everything. So I don't know. It's kind of difficult to say, really. It's like if I looked at like, say, speedrun.com right now, like that list is always cycling out, and there's always a set of players that are just like going to pop in and just like, you know, sort of speedrun a game while it's massively popular, and you know, others are just going to have like, you know, maybe like 50 active players or something like that. That's still really big, if I'm being honest with you. Like, just like in as far as like group of people just like dedicated to breaking down a video game. But as far as like, you know, do I have a game that I really wish more people would play? Not really. Not off the top. It's kind of a big question. I haven't really thought about that one.
So I might shift over then. What was the appeal then of no damage runs as opposed to speed runs?
Well, in the case of speedruns, I felt like I needed to be like too competitive in order for people to actually see any kind of worth in my content. And it's like with no damage, it's like I found just from like, you know, from like watching, you know, team hit lists and whatnot, you know, yeah, it's like really you can just like sort of turn anything into like a competitive format if you so choose. But I mostly wanted to just, you know, kind of do my own thing and, you know, kind of find other ways to beat games efficiently that wouldn't put me up to, you know, this ridiculous time investment in order to be able to just get one world record. Because with a no damage run, it's like you've done it and you can say, yeah, I was able to beat this game without taking any damage. And that's, you know, that's pretty cool. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't make it like easier. It just means that, you know, I can have a concrete goal and be able to sort of like use that baseline to just be able to jump around from game to game and just sort of figure out, okay, what do I need to do in order to beat this game really efficiently, you know?
There's like a finality to it as opposed to potentially forever improvement aspect of a speedrun.
Yeah, basically. And I mean, you can continue to make a larger goal as you go along, you know, obviously with like, you know, the back-to-back no damage clears and stuff like that. I don't know if that's something that I would necessarily want to do someday, but for now, I think a good goal is to just beat every like main Resident Evil, like every Capcom made Resident Evil game without taking any damage, like even segmented.
Wanted to ask about the segmented v full run. Is there a factor about a game that makes you want to do it in segments and then carry on into doing as a continuous run?
Well, it mostly has it's really just you know, completely, you know, do I find it fun? Do I find it fun enough that I actually want to do this without saving? And the answer may be no, or it could turn into a yes in the future. I have no way of, you know, being able to like force myself to, you know, just like do something and be like, yeah, this is fun. Like it just sort of has to like, you know, feel right at the time, you know, whether I've like learned a bunch of things that'll make it all flow together easier. And I just feel like pushing myself and I just like the run or something like that. Or I just feel like doing it. You know, it was easy for me to do with, basically all the Resident Evil runs that I ran pretty competitively, semi-competitively, because I knew those games really well, and I was able to, you know, use some of those strats in order to sort of make it a little more cohesive. But when I started figuring out more ways to like cheese enemies and stuff like that, I just kept up with it. But lately, over the last like year or two, I've mostly been doing segmented stuff, just mostly because I either wanted to record walkthroughs for a game, or because I just wanted to finish a bunch of games that weren't really all that popular, but I felt deserved videos in their own right, you know? So I just wanted to keep like making a bunch of videos. I mean, especially because my YouTube was doing really well at the time, and I had come into a pretty good process of, you know, record the run, record commentary and upload. I just sort of like fell into that.
So the format of videos is, as you mentioned, commentary over the playthrough of a video which mentioned Team Hitless, which is a community of Hitless runners of different games who mainly, I guess, stream. There are obviously some people who record offline, but I believe you predominantly do them offline and then add commentary afterwards. Is that right?
I do all of them while I am streaming. I just make raw recordings of everything that I do. So like if I'm working on a project, then I always have a method of being able to raw record the game audio and the game video, so that way whenever I do commentary, it's a clean feed. I'm not talking over a green screened version of myself with a bunch of crazy alerts and overlays. I just want to make a video specifically for the YouTube viewing experience.
Is there a reason why you go that extra step as opposed to just uploading the raw footage? Is it?
Well, I feel like there is a market for both kinds of content, but the presentation is different. If we're talking like a stream VOD, the appeal to that is being able to interact with the runner and, you know, you don't know what's going to happen next, essentially. So, you know, capturing like all of that hype and then, you know, like and talking to a chat that you were talking to like some number of days ago, and then like putting that on YouTube, it doesn't really ring the same as, you know, being able to discuss the things that went into making the run or the strategies, or, you know, how you as a player can get into doing something like this. It's like, otherwise it kind of boils down to like, you know, monkey see, monkey do. And I like the idea of like helping people with games. At one point it was all about like trying to prove something, when, you know, really I just didn't really have to prove it. I just really like the idea of beating games efficiently and trying to you know, just like talking about it. I just ultimately realized that was more fun.
Yeah, on a similar but separate reason. So I've done several guy videos on different games, and along the lines of, I put this time into learning these bosses, in creating strats for these bosses, or a routine section. That time would be best used, if I'm not going to run, or even if I'm going to run, for other people to be able to learn from that experience, put into a video or a guide or a walkthrough or playthrough. At the start of your YouTube videos of your main channel, it goes into the playthrough, review commentary, but at the start of almost every video, at least, I've not watched them all, but it mentions having a no commentary video. Is there a reason, or people have asked for a particular reason for those videos, or is the reason why I have those linked as the first thing?
Well, I have my reasons for wanting to have no commentary videos. It's like some people might just want to, like, you know, watch the game as it is without like listening to someone talking over it, that's perfectly fine. Other people might want to be able to see the, see and hear the game if they're like trying to learn it by themselves, and just like be able to pick up on like certain timings or certain minute details, which may or may not be useful to them. Some people who might be on the autism spectrum might actually have like sensory overload issues kind of thing. So probably like a easier for them to just like watch something without commentary. But I mean, I just like the idea of giving people an option to watch it without commentary. And I mean, aside from that, it also gives me an excuse to, if someone's like being a dipshit in the comments, I can be like, well, go click on the no commentary version, you fucking cheeseburger. Like, don't fucking cry to me. I gave you the option. What are you doing?
YouTube comments be weird. I saw a weird comment. I think someone had like gone in and done timestamps for one of your videos, so people could like check permission or check for like key things. And I think like it was obviously a deleted comment, but like someone giving gif about it, which I just don't get really. But that's YouTube comments in general, really. Or at least on the negative side, I should say.
I
It's
don't
just
know.
strange.
It's pe it's pe people are weird. Sometimes people just realize that maybe they didn't really want to comment that, but I don't know. It's like a lot of times, I don't know, I've just kind of learned that, like, getting into arguments over stupid bullshit on the internet is just really exhausting. So I just try not to anymore. If I just like don't like the person, I just like go ahead and, see you later. That's it. Just move on. It's just getting in the way of time that I should be spending doing other things.
There's several no damage ones or a few that I want to ask about, but the one that just is coming straight to you, like the first thing that I saw when, which I just went, hang on a sec, is that right? Was your Resi Invisible Mode no damage run.
Oh, yeah.
How did you approach such a thing as, and could you explain it, even though it may be obvious by the title of the run?
Oh, no, of course. Well, I don't think those videos are particularly as popular because, if you're just like watching it and you don't really see the enemies, it's just like, oh, you just blew the head off an enemy, it's dead, and he just moved on. How the you know like just my limited experimentation with like the invisible enemy mode just like didn't really like pick up as much. But I still wanted to do it as like a no damage run because, like how freaking cool would that be, like this mode that just seems like obscenely difficult on paper, and like just being able to beat it without saving and without taking a hit. But yeah, like all the enemies are completely invisible except for their reflections, except for maybe any particle effects that they might kick up or something like that. So there's ways to be able to like to be able to break down, where they are, where they might be. There's just a lot of setups. Basically, 100% of invisible enemy mode is just learning setups. So if you've practiced on like say real survival mode, because in real survival mode is the only other mode in the game that doesn't have automatic aim, so it doesn't like automatically like snap to the enemy whenever you hold the ready button. You can sort of practice, various setups that way. And then after I finished real survival best ending no damage for both characters, I kind of realized that I could work with similar strategies to be able to do the same on invisible enemy mode, because that's it, because basically everything that I was already doing already had a setup and it was already really easy for me, and I already knew exactly where to stop and where to shoot. So in a way, I guess I was just kind of like subconsciously training for like the invisible enemy run when I was working on real survival.
Did any differences come out, or I guess was it just the timing difficulty without having a visual reference?
I mean, it was about the same as real survival. The only thing is the item boxes are linked, so in that regard it is a little easier. It also allows me to just like put away certain items, I guess, like whenever I might need it, something like that, as opposed to like having to backtrack all the way to a specific part of the mansion in order to get like a necessary thing. But in any case, it's just really all knowing where all the enemies are on hard mode and just being able to just knowing like the fine mechanics of like, what is the chance of this enemy getting decapitated? Would it be better to kneecap this zombie over here? Is there a setup to be able to kill these dogs without them hitting me off screen or something like that, you know?
Going into a relatively more recent No Damage run, how did you approach learning Village as a No Damage run?
Well, I didn't really do Village without saving and without taking a hit. I started on Hardcore, and then as I went on to do like Village of Shadows, I began to notice just like how skewed Village of Shadows was towards New Game Plus difficulty. While it is entirely possible to do a New Game No Damage Village of Shadows, it is exceptionally tedious to do so. I would say that this time speedrunning was certainly a more entertaining way to tackle Resident Evil Village. In Resident Evil 7, it was like Madhouse difficulty was still made reasonable to complete, because similarly to like say classic Resident Evil games, there are certain types of ammo that if you had saved them for specific parts of the run, you would just be able to use them and be able to just completely eliminate the think of it like acupuncture. You know, you put a needle in a certain spot and it just releases pressure, it just releases like tension and stuff like that. And it's kind of the same way with like, you know, Resident Evil Remake and Resident Evil 7. Resident Evil Village, on the other hand, everything just takes like a million bullets. Everything is a bullet sponge. So it was just like generally no fun for me to do. So I didn't follow up with doing a no save, no damage run.
If you had to change the difficulty, obviously making it going up in difficulty, how would you change the Village of Shadows to be more difficult than its prior, but in a more fun to play way?
Well, first up, in an ideal world, the enemies would have a lot more hits done. You know, like you'd have more options for being able to stun enemies and also eliminate. Sorry, my cat just burst in through the window and just like started running around. He does that sometimes. You can like the grenade launcher, for instance, in Village of Shadows. It takes 4 grenades to be able to kill even a Lycan, which is, you know, like clearly they wanted to make an absurd difficulty, kind of like they did with like Resident Evil 3 Remake's Inferno mode, by just like putting unreasonable sets of enemies in unreasonable places. Or in the case of Village of Shadows, it's basically the same enemy layouts as they were on Hardcore, except they take an unreasonable amount of damage to be able to kill, and hit stun happens few and far between. You can't really knock enemies back in a lot of cases. There's just like very few crowd control options beyond did I craft enough flash grenades for this section or what have you. And all the bosses just take so many bullets to kill. Sorry, I know you were asking what could I do to improve, and then I just like went on and immediately aired grievances about Resident Evil Village, but it like instead of like, you know, saying anything productive. But I don't know, it just feels much easier for me to express it this way, just because I don't know, I just like can't help but think of how frustrating of an experience it was.
It's fine. It's all good.
I mean, I mean, yeah, sure, like players just, you know, not guy claims the game is too hard and wasn't easy enough for him, you know, kind of thing. But it's really not like that at all. I just genuinely didn't have fun with it.
What was about the speedrun aspect then? That's not, I guess, compared to the Village of Shadows. We'll leave that to one side. But what was it about the speedrunning aspect of Village that was the fun part?
Well, I didn't say that I speedran it.
Okay.
But I looked at speedruns of it, and
oh, okay.
Yeah, it seemed that speedrunning it would have been a more interesting way of like being able to beat it efficiently that time. And I wanted to try and learn it, but there was so much cheese and so many exploits that just like didn't even really have a chance of working correctly either. So I just sort of gave up on it really quickly. if the game's just not fun, especially for like, you know, for like no save, no damage, especially for speedrunning, then it's like, why put myself up to it? I mean, it was certainly disappointing because it was one of those games that actually does bring a lot of traffic to a channel such as mine, and I wasn't able to capitalize on it in the way that I wanted to. But if it's just not fun, it's just not fun. And I might as well move on to things that I actually do find fun.
You mentioned a couple of times talking about efficient ways to complete a game, either both no damage run and speed run. Do you have an example of a game or two games, one that was, or you found an efficient way, more efficient way was speed running, and another one where it was no damage? I guess in this case, Village would be the speed run aspect.
I wouldn't necessarily say that it's more efficient, nearly as much as it makes for a more interesting run, I guess. So in the case of Village of Shadows, yeah, you got your routing, like you got your item routing, your DA routing, and then you got all the strats accordingly. And you know, you can clear the enemies, and how do I put this? It just seemed, you know, it just seemed like it flowed a lot better than trying to do the no save, no damage runs. I mean, maybe if I did like an adaptation of like the speedrun route and tried it again, like no save, no damage, things might be a little different. But I don't know. Like every time I go through like the whole experience of Resident Evil Village and just like, you know, how everything is just really trying to smash rocks with a baseball bat, and then you have to go and you have to keep getting another bat. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just, that's that fun aspect.
Yeah, it's just not very fun, you know. It just ultimately wasn't very fun to me. And I mean, I don't know, maybe it does sound petty, like, you know, like, oh, the video game's too hard for you or something like that. And it's like, dude, I don't care. It's just not fun. Are there games where speedrunning them is more fun compared to no damaging them? I'm going to need to take a second and look through, you know, some of the games I've done, and see if there's anything I've played where speedrunning was more fun. Okay, certainly not on like my speedrun.com page. Yeah, you know, I think that Resident Evil Village might have been the first one where I feel like maybe speedrunning it might have been more fun if I'd actually went that route instead of doing like a no damage run. But even so, I mean, how long would that have lasted? Because everything is a damage sponge.
Moving to variety, in a sense, so there's several others that you've done outside of the Resident Evil series, no damage, should say. I'm just interested where, how they came about, or what was it that appealed, because I don't know, they just they stand out as I was going through the list, like Super Mario Bros or GoldenEye or Cyberpunk 2077, being like outside that survival horror surrounding runs, I should say. Yes,
survival horror adjacent, you mean?
Yeah,
well, I just sort of wanted to roll the dice with different genres of games that weren't really survival horror, like survival horror per se. So like I did Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell because I liked stealth games, and you could do similar challenges from like Resident Evil or other survival horror games in a game like Metal Gear, and nobody was really doing them in Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell. So I did that with the PC version and the PS2 version. And then I did GoldenEye 007. I did that segmented. I did Cyberpunk 2077. I did like Super Mario Brothers. Yeah, I could really like only count the number of games that I've run no save, no damage runs of on like two hands. But I would hope to expand that number at some point. Like it's just more so like finding fun things about the mechanics and just realizing, oh, there's a way to do this efficiently, and you know, just could I clear the game without taking any damage, and has anyone done it yet? No? Okay, I'm just gonna go do it. Try not to make the video too long, because if I do, then it's, you know, I feel like a lot of people are gonna tune out, you know? So that's where like a little bit of speedrun routing comes in, but otherwise it's just mostly been about is it fun to me, and not because of like any particular mechanic that I just like really need to exploit or something like that.
Is there any other variety game that you've either started working on or interested in looking into in the future?
Well, outside of no damage runs, I've been working on lately I started working on like Final Fantasy games a little bit. So I've been doing Final Fantasy IV Pixel Remaster. I just completed a 100% achievements walkthrough without getting any of my characters KO'd. So yeah, It's like Final Fantasy IV in itself is not a particular is not a particularly grindy game. There are points where you could stop and grind if you wanted to, but you don't really have to grind at all. There was really only one enemy that I actually had to stop and grind for, and that is I mean, if you are familiar with Final Fantasy IV, is one of the four elemental lords, Rubikante, in the Tower of Babel, has a single attack that does like 4,000 damage. And it's like a fire elemental attack, and nobody in the party can really has the equipment to be able to like resist such an attack. Nor even if they did have the ability to resist it, could they actually survive it, because it still would have done enough damage in order to just knock someone out in one shot. So I had to like stop and like level everyone up to level 50. Or something like that, in order to be able to pass that. And that was like about the only thing that I had to do. Otherwise, the criteria for 100% achievements would have been to get all the summons, get all the bestiary entries, pick up every treasure chest, every hidden item, things like that. So, and also there was one point where I actually did have to grind to level 70 in order to get another achievement, but that was like at the end of the game when everything would have been piss easy anyway. So, but overall it took me maybe like about 12 hours in game time to do something like that. And it's like I'd like to do that with like other Final Fantasy games, but probably do like different things just like based on the mechanics, because the mechanics of different Final Fantasy games just vary wildly between one another. So certain challenges might be fun in some, certain challenges might not be fun in others. Even though it might be possible, it's like, do you really want
to
do it?
Always like stemming back to the fun aspect. Is this challenge or run or game going to be a fun experience to do this particular challenge on?
So. Yeah, so I just sort of make up my own challenges and try to make them have like a similar appeal to other videos that I've already done. Whether it's trying to meet certain 100% criteria or trying to beat the game safely while also beating bosses really quickly, stuff like that.
And I brought up Resident Evil as like the survival horror main thing, but you've also done other horror games such as like Alien Isolation, Castlevania, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't really call Castlevania like a survival horror game. I mean, it's
like horror.
It's definitely horror adjacent, but it's a But in particular, it's a it's a platformer. Like, it's mostly been platformers, like platformer RPG sort of games. But you know, I played a lot of that as well.
It was just more of a mention towards just leaving survival horror, that doing other horror based games such as like Alien Isolation and Castlevania and Silent Hill. Is it always about the particular game? Just because I've noticed that there can be a lot of variation of times of runs, such as like, I guess Alien Isolation is like a 4.5 to 5 hour run, I believe.
Yeah, like the speed run comes down to around Alien Isolation. The closest category to what I would have been running probably would have been like 100% or something like that. But I don't know. I think one could do a glitchless 100% no damage in Alien Isolation. I mean, like, if they actually know the speedrun strats, because most of the issue in Alien Isolation just stems from being able to manipulate the xenomorph and not get screwed by that.
Before I go to strat making, I just want to mention one last thing on Resident Evil, even though I just went off it again. Just a couple of interesting mods I saw, which looked really fun, like the randomizer door one video. I'm just interested if there was any other modded content that you've enjoyed in any of the games.
Any other modded content that I've enjoyed? There is a pretty funny one called Kendo's Mod for Resident Evil 2, where you basically play as the gun store owner. Well, not really play as the gun store owner, but like, it's sort of like a what if scenario. What if the gun store owner lived, like at the start of Resident Evil 2, like the classic Resident Evil 2, and suddenly he's like just sort of following Leon or Claire around in like the shadows, and then it just becomes like this. It's not like It's not like a serious thing at all. As a matter of fact, you have these ridiculous things happening. Like, instead of Mr. X busting out of a wall, it's Kendo instead, and he chases Mr. X off or something like that, you know? So it's just really, really lighthearted, really funny stuff. I mean, like, I don't really know of any like mods that really focus on the general mechanics of the gameplay quite like randomizers do. A lot of them are just really silly, really funny.
The randomized door one is exactly what it sounds. I believe it was the Resident Evil 1 or the remake. I think it was a remake or might have been a classic. Where you go through a door and appears at any other entry or exit point in the game, which I've seen.
Yeah, the door randomizer was pretty crazy. I know I uploaded a video of that, but I don't even remember if I completed that or not. I'm actually pretty bad at remembering what happens in a lot of my videos just because I've done like so many of them. I mean, if I rewatched it and I like saw that, it's like, oh, I'm kind of unhappy with it. I might redo that someday. But I mean, like, but like randomizers are just all about, like, you know, the streamer is just as surprised as the viewer is, essentially. But you can also still challenge yourself to be able to do things with, like, you know, certain seeds or whatever.
So going off from that into a question on the remake. So you've done the originals in various aspects, be running no damage. As well as playing a lot, what were your thoughts on the remakes that have come out of the original trio?
Resident Evil 1 Remake is my favorite video game of all time. Resident Evil 2 Remake was a very, 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 very good remake. Resident Evil 3, not so much. I feel like they could have done a lot more with Resident Evil 3, but just kind of didn't. And that's really about it as far as remakes go.
What are the changes you would have wanted to see in Resident Evil 3? My query is just because Resident Evil 2 and 3, like, I'm pretty like they came out pretty soon to each other, so it's just interesting what the difference happened in 3 compared to 2.
Well, I would have liked in 3 for Nemesis to have been less of a set piece. You know, Resident Evil 3, he felt as much of a character as any of the other characters, and you know, you were actually afraid to like encounter him around the corner. And they sort of were able to sort of like bring that back with Mr. X in Resident Evil 2, but Nemesis in Resident Evil 3 is just another obstacle that you just like either kind of run around or just like, you know, you don't really do much with him. He stalks you through a very small portion of the game, which is like the first third of the game, and then he only appears in like 3 boss fights after that. And each time it's just a ridiculous mutation that otherwise just bears no resemblance to anything that appeared in like the original Resident Evil 3. So it's like they could have actually done a lot more with Nemesis, but I feel like they just kind of watered it down.
One last thing on speedrunning. When you were speedrunning, what actions or practice or focus did you put towards improving as opposed to learning, if there was a difference?
As far as like improving, in the case of a speedrun, I guess I should probably back up a little bit. So I've actually cut down on a lot of games that I actually speedrun. Like, I actually went through my speedrun.com profile and actually scrubbed a lot of PBs. Reason being, I was either just really unhappy with these PBs, or I just wanted to not feel beholden to returning to those games in the future. Such as like Dino Crisis 2, like Parasite Eve 2 or something like that. Like, there are some games that I actually would like to dust off and at least attempt to get better, such as with Parasite Eve 1, Final Fantasy 8, maybe Metal Gear Solid the Twin Snakes. But other than that, you know, I feel like trying to improve on speedrunning is just not really a desire that I really have. In the case of no damage runs, what would actually bring me back to doing a no damage run is if I set out to do a goal and I wasn't able to complete that goal and I just sort of settled for, you know, the next best thing. For instance, my Code Veronica run, which I did on Dreamcast, my initial goal was to get an S rank for that run. So that would have meant doing Code Veronica in 2 segments. The problem was, I wasn't able to figure out an easy, efficient strat for Nosferatu, which is the first boss on that disc, because it has this ridiculous gas attack that just sort of blows wherever it wants, you know, just like literally wherever the wind blows. And it has like this tentacle attack that hits like 270 degrees, and its recovery time is just generally way too fast. You have no way of being able to predict these things. Basically, the fight just like does nothing but keep you on your toes. About the next best thing that you can do is stun loop it, but the problem is with that, the spacing with the knife, for instance, is very, very, very tight. So you can't really use the knife as a consistent strat. At least I personally could not. If I could actually like notice something like a better setup or something that would actually enable me to do it a lot easier, then I would, but I didn't. And then there's the sniper rifle as the other strat. I just have a lot of trouble aiming with the sniper rifle because it aims whenever you try to move the reticule for the sniper rifle, it always moves at a consistent rate. There's no fine adjustment. Even though there's an analog stick on the Dreamcast, you're not using that analog stick for the sniper rifle. There's no fine adjustment for that sniper rifle whatsoever. So you can't really, so it's difficult for me to actually find the hitbox on Nosferatu that actually makes him recoil and allows me to beat him. Then there's later bosses. Let's see. The gulpworm is whatever. The albinoid is just like aim downwards with like the submachine gun into the water and just never jump in the water. Alexia 2 is probably like the next like worst hurdle. And I mean like beyond Nosferatu, I mean like everything else about the game isn't too bad. But I was also recording cutscenes and whatnot as well. So to kind of circle back to that, how would I improve that? Well, I would go back and I would actually do an S rank run. I would go back and do Resident Evil Zero in fewer segments and without the one New Game Plus weapon that I used in order to be able to bypass the bat. I would go back and try to finish Dino Crisis 2 in fewer segments and just focus on what is the bare minimum that I need to do in order to clear the game no damage, because I didn't even really like route that very much. You know, it's like very intricate routing at that point, because you have to kill enemies in order to be able to get money, and if you don't kill enemies, you don't get money, and it just makes like certain parts of the runs like really difficult. So I don't know, I just didn't do a very good job of routing some of those, and I feel like I could go back and do something that is more efficient and more consistent. Or like in the case of, I actually do want to go back and redo some of the videos for more classic Resident Evil titles, because I have some better strats that I think would make the game easier for like a lot of new players that I just like didn't know at the time of recording. And you know, now I want to try to present those, especially if they're games that have like built-in achievement systems and are on more contemporary consoles that are like more accessible to more people.
So if you're approaching a new run, or that you needed routing, maybe an extension of a previous run, what would be your step one approach to going into that?
My step one approach would be to watch other runs that other people have done, because you know, it's like I don't need to lay claim that, you know, I'm like the only person who has strategies, or that I came up with everything all on my own, you know? Because really it's like being world's first at anything. You know, it's like in hitless runs, like yeah, you make a big deal out of world's first. And you know, it's kind of similar to world record in that regard, but really it's like it could literally happen to anyone. So it basically becomes, you know, equal parts dedication, but ultimately it does come down to luck to some degree, who gets it first, because that person is competing with outside factors, like outside of their control, that are not even necessarily related to the video game. It's like, what's to stop someone else from just like, you know, somehow being more efficient than you and just doing it first, you know? So it's really just chaos. I mean, how can you really posit yourself as like, you know, an authority or something in that regard? I mean, granted, it is really, really cool to be that person who got the first thing of anything. You know, that's a great thing to celebrate. But you know, but it's not something that's worth, it's not something that's worth chasing, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at, just simply because of how, of like that chaos factor, you know?
I guess an easy variable that comes into account in that sort of thing would be time allowance. Like someone who buys it and plays it at the weekends doesn't have the ability or the freedom to do 8 hours a day as potentially someone else may do, but that a streamer or just someone who's bought it who is at university or inserts a situation.
Well, I mean, even someone who is a full-time streamer, you know, is still going to, even someone who is a full-time streamer, you know, they're still subject to all of these like outside factors. And it's like, even if you tried to cut down on like all of it and just did nothing but dedicate your life to it, what's to stop someone else from, you know, doing exactly the same or just flat out getting luckier, you know? So, you know, so it's like, you know, you can't really chase that. I mean, you can, but you know, is it going to be, you know, but is the outcome going to be anything but lucky? And I don't think that it is, because it still depends on outside factors no matter what.
I guess it depends on what people are looking for from the world's first or in that regard, because at least in terms of YouTube, I would say that the first no damage run of a game is going to probably get seen the most. That would potentially be a factor in why people would chase it.
Somewhat. But I mean, when I did Resident Evil Village or Resident Evil 3 Remake, for instance, I didn't do any no save, no damage runs in either of those games. And I still had access to both of those games. Well, okay, not Village. I actually did not get Village until literally the day before release. But, you know, it's like if you're a full-time streamer, if you're a full-time content creator, then you can ask Capcom for a copy of the game and they will just give it to you, sometimes up to a week in advance. And I did that for several games and was able to bang out like no damage runs before they were released. Resident Evil 2 Remake, Resident Evil 3 Remake being two of those. And you know, but it's like in neither of those occasions did I finish a no save, no damage run. I was able to do it with, I was able to get like world's first for Leon B, Claire A, and Claire B in Resident Evil 2 Remake. But for Resident Evil 3, you know, it's like, could I have done that a week in advance? I don't think that I could have, you know. If someone else, like say Aether, for instance, who I would concede is like far better than me at like a lot of this stuff, you know, he would if he had it a week in advance, would he have gotten it? Probably within like, you know, the first week of release, you know? And it all comes, you know, it just all comes down to, you know, just the way that we all process different things, and it's just input output, and some people are just more efficient at it than others. And it, you know, there's a saying, you know, no matter how good you are at something, there is always someone who is going to do better. And, you know, I don't think that should deter anyone from doing challenge runs or trying to be like competitive at speed runs or something like that, you know, because everyone has like their different things that they find enjoyable about all of them. Mine just happens to be about, you know, making commentaries and trying to beat games efficiently for fun. Like it used to be about, you know, it used to be about competition, but I just like don't want to do that anymore because I just found it really stressful.
One last query in terms of the learning aspect before I just move into the content creation side. What level of consistency, if that's the right way to put it, in a strat or section or route do you need or would like to have before implementing it in a full run?
In a full no damage run, I would ideally like to have like a 90% success rate in something.
And would that be doing 10 runs in or 10 iterations of that section or boss or mob, let's say?
Well, yeah, like if I was able to get through a section without taking a hit, like maybe like, you know, 9 out of 10 times, and it's just like, it just like feels really easy for me to do, then it's like, yeah, okay, this is making it in. But otherwise, if it's like less consistent, then I have to look for the most consistent thing otherwise, because, you know, then it means that I have to brute force it until the game just like lets me by. Because some parts of video games do be like that. They're just like not that well designed and you have to brute force them.
And so we've talked or mentioned efficiency quite a bit. If people are looking to do no damage runs. I personally found looking at speed runs to be a great resource in regard to finding strats for no damage runs, because speedrunners have found these efficient strats to deal with sections or bosses or other aspects of the game. So just as mentioned, that speedruns of a game, even if you're going for no damage, are a great resource.
Yes, like I would say they're actually a very good resource. I mean, like sometimes whenever I do a no damage run, I like to go and try to learn a speed run of a game really, you know, like really quickly, like within like a few days, and see if there's anything that I could actually like borrow from that in order to make a section, you know, completely 100% passable. And I mean, there's plenty of dodges and like. In Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 3, that are going to have like some semblance of luck, but sometimes they can be done with a very, very high success rate. But I mean, if I find that a strat is already like 100% successful, I'm not gonna rock the boat. I'm just gonna hold on to that 100%.
I want to go to things related to position as being a full time content creator. I want to start with what's an aspect of that people may not be aware of, or the general people might not be aware of, public.
Sorry, could you rephrase the question?
What is an aspect of being a full-time streamer, content creator, that the general audience or people in general may not be aware of?
I would say that, like, on the outset, a lot of what people see is that the content creator is just playing the video game, and they think that it's all video games all the time. And I mean, playing video games is a part of that. Playing video games does get the content made, but playing video games in themselves is not the content. I actually do not view streaming in itself as content. I view that as part of my content making process. But there's a lot of other things that go on in the background between like having to do analytics on different videos and trying to figure out like what keywords are going to get the videos to show up a lot better. How to organize, how to present, how to break down, you know, every single detail of like, you know, what someone is going to see, and, you know, like, do I need to put this much effort into this aspect of commentary, or do I need to not? But really, it's like, I would say like the amount of work, as opposed to like, you know, the playing video games part, is about like 50-50, really. It's like, Let's just put it this way. If people think that all I do is play video games, then I guess I'm doing my job.
So going off that, a couple of mentions ago, what would you want, or what do you want a viewer to experience when they click on a Cast Engine video?
I just want them to see cool things to do in video games that they might not have thought of on their own. And I want them to be able to watch the videos, understand the strategies, and be like, oh, hey, I could do this for myself, or hey, this is really helpful, or, you know, even just be generally entertained by, like, you know, watching these videos, you know, even if they don't go and do the things themselves, you know, it's just really, you know, like, just be able to watch them and, you know, sort of be like, oh, wow, that was actually really cool. I didn't know that you could do that in these games. Because that's how it was for me when I first started watching speedrun videos and whatnot. And I guess I sort of want to bestow upon the viewer a similar experience. Whereas it's like the landscape of speedrunning has changed a lot, in that everything is more competition centric. It's all about, like, you know, getting the world record. It's more about, you know, the experience of being someone. It's all about the experience of having a title. So, you know, it's like I want to be able to do something that is just like outside of that, and just like generally show, just like generally show like cool ways to beat video games, you know.
In terms of events, or I guess notable moments, I saw you've participated in AGDQ at least four times that I saw. Has that experience been something you've enjoyed doing?
Yeah, I would say so. I think that actually trying to get a run into games done quick is a lot more stressful, because that would mean that you have to focus on a specific video game, like basically, you know, the meta for games done quick goes a little something like this. You are able to submit 5 games and up to 10 categories for each of those games. I mean, it doesn't amount to like 50 categories, sorry. It means you can only do 10 across all five of those entries. So you have to be very judicious with what you choose, and then you have to like be able to pitch, you know, are there some incentives that people will want to donate for? And is there anything that you can, you know, that you can bring to the table that's just like that either hasn't been done, or, you know, that you could do differently from previous times that a specific game has been shown. Basically, I haven't really done any Games Done Quick entries because I've been focused more on doing like no damage stuff and just like trying to, you know, make that sort of work as like my mainline content. Like these days, my no damage stuff actually does like significantly better than my speedruns on my YouTube channel. So I just kind of want to keep it that way because I just find that I like it a lot better. But I would like to do speedruns. I would like to do more speedrun adjacent type stuff for the purpose of getting into Games Done Quick, because, you know, the times that I have been on stage, it's been fun. But it's just the actual submission process and, you know, being forced to kind of stick to specific sets of games has been kind of stressful, and I just like needed to reevaluate my approach to it, aside from some personal reasons. But just mostly reevaluating my approach to it. And, you know, I kind of feel more and more ready to try. But I just haven't really dedicated the time in a very long time, let alone found a way to sort of work it into my main, you know, into my main production flow, and, you know, still be able to have enough time to be able to do other things that I want to pursue in life, just like outside of streaming and whatnot.
If there was a game in mind you had for, say, GDQ 2022, is there any that comes to mind?
Well, not yet. That's kind of why I want to go back into speedrunning in general, is to just sort of, like rekindle that sort of enjoyment for speedrunning, but under the lens of not trying to do it for world records.
Another couple of, I guess, events is perhaps not the right word, but it could be applied, which seem amazing, was playing with directors of the Resident Evil games on at least two occasions that I saw. Resident Evil 2 with, and I apologize if I mispronounce any of these, Hideki Kamiyo, and Resident Evil 2, 3 with Ayame Kazuhiro.
Oh, Resident Evil 2 with Hideki Kamiya, and Resident Evil 3 with Kazuhiro Aoyama.
I'm interested how those occasions came to be, and how was the experience?
Well, they all came from more or less a chance encounter with a very good friend, with who is now a very good friend of mine. This guy by the name of Alex Aniel, who goes by CVX Freak online on Twitter. He works in the game industry out in Japan, and he runs a video game music label there called Brave Wave, and is also basically the head of operations for the Japanese branch of Limited Run Games. It's kind of a recent development, but he in his line of work, he's been able to meet and talk to a lot of key members of like the Resident Evil staff who previously worked or may still work at Capcom in some capacity. And, you know, both Hideki Kamiya and Kazuhiro Aoyama no longer work for Capcom. Kamiya-san works at Platinum Games now, and Aoyama-san works for, I believe, IREM now. But he wrote a book about the development history of Resident Evil, which I recommend, you know, anyone listening to this podcast should go check out. It's called An Itchy Tasty History of Resident Evil. And he basically talks to like all the directors of all of the games, like all the classic Resident Evil games, and basically just talks about like, you know, the history and whatnot. And basically he pitched to me like, you know, how would you like to do a speedrun with the director of Resident Evil 3? And I'm like, I was a little apprehensive at first, like, yo, is this gonna be okay? And so I was like, okay, well, I'll do it. This actually sounds like it could be really interesting. So I flew to Japan, and we rented out some office space, and did the whole thing. And it took about like, you know, it was about like a four hour sit down playing through Resident Evil 3 and just talking about it, and Aoyama-san going over all of his like just going over all of the all of like his stories of like development that he could remember, and it was great. It was amazing. It was like it was you know, awesome experience. And you know, then we went out and we had a you know, went out and got sushi with him afterwards. You know, Aoyama-san is a very, you know, is a very, very wholesome guy. Then the following year, Alex talked to Kamiya-san, and we were able to get him on board. Apparently he liked the idea. The actual commentary was a little different because I think it was more focused on, like, you know, the theme of being the director that time, I think. And so we sat down and we did Leon, or Claire A, Leon B, with Kamiya-san for like, yeah, he just spent like freaking 6 hours, you know, just like doing the whole thing. It's like both of those were really cool. And you know, on account of the pandemic, I haven't been able to go back and do any more. Before the pandemic happened, I was actually supposed to do Code Veronica with Hiroki Kato, who was the director of Code Veronica, but that plan kind of fizzled out really fast.
yeah, it's been a mess of 2 years at the minute.
Throughout the whole thing, you know, because it's like my Japanese is not that great. I mean, Alex basically just carried both of the streams on his back because, you know, he's JLPT N1 and he's been living there for like 13 years. So like, I mean, I gotta say he was like the real star of those streams.
So I saw in your Cyberpunk, was that you doing the voiceover at the start?
The voiceover at the start.
Like the thank you for listening in Japanese or thank you for watching.
Maybe you're thinking of another video.
It might be. I know it's one of your videos. I'm sure it was. It might be a different video.
Maybe, I don't know. You might be thinking of like some of the sponsored content I did.
Potentially. The query was just if that was you doing the voiceover.
I mean, the only time that I've ever actually used Japanese in any of my videos, aside from just like dumb memes or something like that. Well, essentially, this is still a dumb meme. Was the paid promotion disclaimers at like the start of certain videos. For instance, I did a Resident Evil 4 VR paid promotion for Oculus. Like, I did a no damage run of Resident Evil 4 VR on the Oculus Quest 2. And then they would say the following video is a paid promotion. Like, hang on one sec. Like, basically, I would just say it in English. Or like, not say it in English, but... Oh, did I just like not do it at the start of that Resident Evil 4 VR video? No, not that time. It was... Crap, I'm trying to remember. Oh, maybe it was like when I was doing the dumb WarioWare thing. But basically, yeah, it's この番組はご覧のスポンサーの提供でお送りします。Which is basically this program has a paid promotion from the sponsored company to bring to you or something like that. But basically it's a thing they say at the start of an anime episode, if it was like to air on TV in Japan, they just say that, and they just like show the sponsors and stuff like that.
Is Japanese something you're actively learning, or I've just like picked up things?
I mean, active learning every so often, but a lot of times I just try to pick it up organically, like where I can. It's like if I recognize a character or something whenever I'm trying to read a post in Japanese on Twitter, then I just take the word I see, or take the kanji or something like that, and I just run it through Google Translate and just like, okay, so this is how it would be pronounced, this is what it means. You know, I don't run like the whole sentence through like Google Translate, because if you try to run something like that through Google Translate, more often than not, it's not really going to work that way. Yeah, it's gonna be really weird. But yeah, I'm trying to make it my goal to move to Japan whenever the borders open up.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that, you know, it'll put me closer to, you know, what I feel will be a lot more opportunities down the road. And besides that, I just want the opportunity to live in another country before I get too old.
That seems really cool. Like, obviously you can't say because you've got to live the experience for finding out how it is. But just living in Japan seems a really cool thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It just kind of makes sense to me to try, you know. I mean, I just want to do it. Was I looking into it prior to what? Sorry.
It's like COVID and everything.
Well, it's I wasn't exactly looking into it prior to COVID, actually. I was in a relationship with someone at the time, just right after I had gotten back from Japan from the Kamiya video. I began a relationship with someone. Then during COVID, we broke up, and I just kind of decided that, you know, after that I just wanted to go to Japan, because, you know, it was something that I just always wanted to do. And, you know, because COVID, you know, shutting everything down, you know, just kind of made me realize that if I didn't take the opportunity, you know, when and would anything like that happen again, that would just make it so that I'm unable to do anything like that, you know? So it's just more of a, you know, do it if you really want to do it, because you only live once. A lot of people would make the argument that, oh, well, you're just doing it because you're like a huge weeaboo or whatever. And I'm like, you know, it's just got nothing to do with that. I just really like being out there, and I just want to go back. And I actually think that I want to try my hand at living there. I don't know for how long. I might even get tired of it. Who knows?
We've experienced it.
Yeah, but it's like I've been there several times. I like it enough to want to go back there and live there. You know, I've got friends out there. I'm gonna go do it. So I'll find a way to do it.
Sort of on just, it's a more of a random thought than anything else, but just reminded me. I saw a tweet where you said, "Fine, I'll start watching JoJo's," and I was just interested in if who's been pestering or how that's. I was interested in the tone of the tweet.
Oh well, it actually means that a bunch of sweaty nerds were holding pop guns to the back of my head and forcing me to watch JoJo. No, actually, it's no, I guess it was kind of one of those things where I just like kind of wanted to check it out, but I don't really have like the time investment. Like, I don't really have the time to invest in, like, you know, a lot of things. And I don't even really watch like anime much at all. It's like very, very rare exceptions where I just like, you know, might see something that that looks cool, and it's like, oh, okay, I'll go watch that, you know. And yeah, I just started watching JoJo because a lot of people were like all on about, like, you know, the new season, like Stone Ocean, and I'm like, oh, okay, it is a season with like brand new characters and whatnot, and I feel like the writing of such a thing would be conducive for someone to just like be able to jump in without having seen anything else and be able to enjoy it. So I did, and yeah, it kind of gave me a glimpse of, you know, the rest of the world of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And it didn't even really like rehash over a lot of like any of like the previous major plot points or anything like that. So yeah, there is impetus to actually go back and watch the other episodes of the anime if I so choose to do so later down the road. But, you know, yeah, I'm just a casual anime viewer. I ain't no anime master over here. You know, I haven't seen all the JoJo's. Please don't ice me, homie.
My last query around content creation before going to some quick questions is, leading up to becoming a full-time content creator, was there any notable events or moments that led to that happening, if that's the right way to put it?
Well, I've been doing speedruns since roughly like 2006. And streaming began to take off around like 2011, 2012, something like that. And just like, you know, there was a nice big jumping up point around like 2013, 2014 or so. In 2014, I decided to follow a lot of my friends up to New York City because I was just bored of life in Florida, and I just wanted to. You know, I just wanted something, you know, something else that just like, you know, wasn't a college town and just like college town life. And, you know, I just wanted to be able to figure out where I was going in life and figure out opportunities. And pretty much as soon as I moved up, my grandmother passed away. So she left me a lot of money, and I went up to New York, and, you know, I was kind of depressed, kind of confused, trying to figure out like, okay, what the fuck am I doing up here? I just on a whim decided to move to one of the most expensive cities in the nation. I don't really have like a concrete battle plan. I have friends who are allowing me to, you know, who are allowing me to stay with them and get my bearings. And then it was after a point in time that a friend of mine, someone I met up in New York actually, who was he was the super of my two best friends' apartment. Yeah, he was a recording engineer, and you know, I was just like hanging out with him a bunch, and you know, like shadowing him, watching him work and stuff. And he eventually just like gave the suggestion, why not try full-time Twitch streaming? And I was like, you know, my Twitch channel does pretty okay. I get like an average of like 300, 400 viewers whenever I play Resident Evil. Nobody donates money or anything, so I have to wonder like, you know, how something like that is supposed to work. And then, I don't know, I just like for a week, I was like, okay, why not just try it for a week? And so I started streaming for a week, and I had like very consistent times. There wasn't really a whole lot of market competition on Twitch for like, you know, for like people wanting to watch like Resident Evil games and stuff like that. So I just started streaming more, and I got like about like an average of like 700 something odd viewers within like a week. And it's like, what the fuck? What's going on? These are like full-time streamer numbers. So I just kept with it, and I just decided to keep up the pressure. And eventually I was able to get partner, and I'm like, okay, if I stop this, then I'm probably not going to have another shot at doing this again. So I just kept with it. And it's like, I have enough money to live off of. Why don't I just, you know, keep doing it, keep trying. And so I did. And it's just from there on, I just decided to become a full-time streamer. And I was operating at a loss for a couple of years. I lived pretty cheaply, but just like more or less just reinvested all the money that I had received from streaming back into my stream setup and into trying to break down, you know, the business of Twitch and whatnot. So like, you know, flying to conventions, this, that, and the other, and you know, just kind of just, well, okay, I can't say like just, because that would just be like that would just be like such a casual way of viewing it, like, oh, you know, I just became a full-time streamer, you know, no big deal, when it's like a lot of people would just like literally kill to have this job.
Just quick, what was the partner requirements back then? Because just in terms of numbers, I would have thought it'd be more than, you know.
Well, it was, partner requirements were actually pretty steep back then. You basically had to keep streaming like pretty much every day for like a month, and you had to get like at least 500 viewers or something like that. Actually, it was really more like you have to be able to maintain it for like a week. And I did maintain it for a week, and then I applied for partner and I got rejected. And someone who was a friend of mine who worked at Twitch from the speedrunning community goes by Rom Scout. He's actually pretty well known for like Symphony of the Night. He just told me to try it again in like a week, because they just want to make sure that you can actually maintain those numbers. It's like, and it's like, I could just tell by the audience that I had at the time, you know, they were fucking all about it, you know, like they were just staying up all night to watch my stream, because I was streaming at night. So if that's what they were doing, then I kept up with it, and eventually I was able to make partner after like a couple of weeks.
You mentioned reinvesting the money from streaming back into, if someone is streaming and either earning money or wants to invest other money into the streaming, what would you recommend, or what do you think's like the first thing or a step by step in what you would think to improve the streaming experience?
It kind of depends on the person. It kind of depends on what you're trying to do with your content, I would say. If you have like a clear-cut goal for your content, then, you know, you might want to invest in, I mean, first and foremost, the absolute first thing that you should invest into is getting a badass computer. Like you absolutely want to start with getting a good computer. Because you're going to want to try to be able to hit like 1080p on Twitch at like bare minimum. It's like pretty soon 4K is going to be a thing, but 1080p is you know, is like a good baseline to start with.
So computer being the first thing.
Right. Yeah. So computer is the first thing. You know, you just got to make sure that whatever you are streaming with is going to capture real easy. It's probably a little difficult to do that nowadays because of the chip shortage and, you know, crypto miners just buying everything and scalping everyone. It's a pretty horrible environment. So like, as far as I would say the first thing to invest in is a good microphone setup. You know, you don't really need like a fancy camera. I mean, if you do decide you're going to stream with a camera, then choose something that isn't like a Microsoft Live Cam or something like that, or like isn't like, you know, a Logitech C920 or what have you, and maybe some lighting at that point. But I would say the absolute first thing that is going to absolutely deter someone from wanting to watch you is the quality of your sound, and like having a good microphone will completely eliminate all of that. But you also have to learn like a little bit about, you know, the way that microphones work, and, you know, what's going to pick up, and are they going to pick up your computer fan, or, you know, things like that, which is why I personally go with a headset. And I just have a, you know, and I would say go with a simple USB XLR audio interface, and, you know, that's like good enough for the most part. Then I would focus on computer. I would focus on, you know, getting a good processor, getting enough RAM, and getting something that's going to handle NVENC appropriately. Get a capture card, be able to stream off consoles. Then, you know, after that point, move on to like two computers or something like that. Because a lot of the time, like streaming on PC is going to be the ideal, but I would say focus on audio quality first and picture quality second, because a lot of people who watch streams actually lurk in the background and are generally not like always going to be interacting with you. So it's just good to be able to keep those, you know, even if you're not talking to someone in chat, it's just good to be able to keep those lurkers around, you know. Respect the lurk.
If you had one piece of advice for a new no damage or speedrunner, what would that advice be?
The advice I would have would be for someone like brand new, as far as like speedrunning goes, I would say work on bosses first. And then work on the order in which you pick up key items. Basically, strats that would seem to be speedrun strats are not mutually exclusive to like speedrunning alone. And sometimes, you know, you can use faster, or you can use some speedrun strats and have them be easier to do for like a no damage run, and vice versa. I mean, I would say try to cover both. Do both speedruns and no damage, because the ideas behind both actually do play off of each other.
If one game could be released tomorrow, either an announced, unannounced, or a sequel to a game you don't think will ever exist, what game would it be?
If one game could be released today, what would I like to play? What could I really, really wish for? Code Veronica remake. Sure, why not? Let's just roll with that. I just kind of take the video game industry as, you know, I just kind of roll with the punches, you know?
There's a large mental aspect to do with challenge runnings, whether that be in speedrunning, trying to get a new record, or in no hit running, no damage running, trying to complete the run. Could you tell me a time when a run was taking its toll and how you got past that?
Well, when a run does take its toll, I actually have learned that I need to really not put so much effort into it. If I've hit a plateau, then it could be like any number of factors. Like either I'm too exhausted to continue, or I'm just not as interested in it as interested in, you know, trying to push myself as I thought I would be, or I'm just not really seeing, you know, something that's really easy to do that I could pick up and, you know, sort of make more efficient. So I've just like kind of learned that, you know, if you hit a wall, just stop and go play another game. Just stop and try what you're doing with another game. I mean, there are times when you are going to have to push yourself in order to be able to clearly define a goal for yourself. But I would say like, you know, like get a PB and move on, you know, don't grind too much unless you really, really, really enjoy what you are doing at that particular moment in time. There is really not much of a reason to just like grind it into dust, you know, because like, if you really want someone, you'll, Yeah, sorry. If you really want something, you'll get it eventually.
How would you describe a good community, and how would or have you cultivated a community?
Are we talking about on stream?
Stream or Discord or YouTube, whichever one that... Twitch would probably be the easiest, probably.
Yeah. Well, if we're talking about like speedrunning communities, I kind of failed there.
Twitch.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, I, you know, like if we're talking about like if we're talking about Twitch, you know, I don't actually know, if I'm being honest with you. Just try to hang out. Try not to be too woke where you can help it. Try to understand that people are people, and other than that, just enjoy yourself. The more you enjoy yourself, the more other people will also enjoy themselves.
If I said most hyped or celebrated moment on stream, what would be the moment that comes to mind?
Most hyped or most celebrated moment on stream? What was the funniest thing that happened? I mean, I still think that one of the funniest things that happened on stream was there was a Reddit post of it a while back. But the first time I tried to demonstrate a Resident Evil 1 best ending speedrun when I was first starting streaming full time. It only shows up as a freaking PNG, doesn't it? Nope, there it goes. So I got killed by some poison gas, like not realizing that the mechanics behind poison gas were like different in a specific release of Resident Evil Director's Cut. I actually didn't know this until like about a year ago. And I was wondering like how I died so quickly, but it's like, oh, well, that was just really abrupt. I just died abruptly to just like something really dumb. And, you know, I just sunk down into my chair and disappeared.
Yeah, just as a visual for people, Cass sent me a gif of him sinking below down the chair below the camera.
Yeah, basically just sunk really, really, really low.
So any hype? So I guess that might be an embarrassing or potentially embarrassing moments.
But you're asking about hype. You want hype.
We can stick with embarrassing if you wish.
I'm trying to think of, I mean, like aside from like, you know, getting a no save, no damage run for the first time, or maybe like getting a world record, you know, just like, you know, yes, you know, like, I don't know. I haven't really done anything like that in a while. You know, it's been so long since I've had like a real hype moment on like Twitch in particular that I kind of don't remember what it's like, and I need to figure out how to sort of create that environment again, you know. But I think a lot of that also has to do with just the way that my perspective on speedrunning, getting world records and shit like that has changed, and how to how to sort of manufacture the stakes, you know what I mean? To make it feel like there's something at stake. But these days I just like have such a, these days I just have like such a, I guess a sort of, you know, not really like lackadaisical, but I just like don't really care about like, you know, trying to get world records or anything like that anymore. So like what is at stake for me in order to make this hype? You know, what is it that I need to be able to get myself involved emotionally?
I guess it's sort of a good lead off into my final question, which is, what's in the future plans of Carcinogen?
What is in the future plans, Carcinogen?
SDA, of course. What does the SDA stand for, Alvinger?
Speed Demos Archive.
Ah, fair.
Yeah. So I just have the SDA at the end of my name, because that is the website that I used to submit speedrun videos to. So it's just there as a sort of origin story, I guess. It's not my initials or anything like that. A lot of people think it's my initials, so they're like, hey, SDA. I'm like, stop that. You know, it's like I just visibly like, you know, like literally cringe whenever they say that. It's like, dude, no, it's that's not what you think it is.
That's not a thing.
There is an awful lot of that with me. It's just like people thinking that like, you know, something that like, you know, something that I use to like make something short and intuitive They think that it means a thing that it doesn't really mean, and it's like, then I just like get mad at myself for not properly communicating the thing. So, yeah, what is next in plans? I guess for now I'm just gonna go back to doing like various speed runs and just like try to make it a variety thing, you know. So like, you know, one, so like maybe every day, every other day, like switch over to like another speed run or something, or, you know, bring stuff back. Like I'm kind of afraid of like, you know, ramping myself up as like, oh, it's the Resident Evil guy, you know, and I stopped, like I wanted to stop doing Resident Evil a lot because I didn't want to be like, you know, only pigeonholed into that. But, you know, more to the point, I just want to try to find, you know, ways to like sort of make hype shit happen on stream again, because I kind of miss it.
I'm sure there'll definitely be stuff coming up. There'll be something going into the fresh new year. Hopefully there's some cool stuff that kicks off, happens, or ends up being there. Kasi, I really appreciate taking the time out for this, man. I've enjoyed this conversation a lot. I hope you've enjoyed it as well, man.
Oh, no, totally. It was fun. It was fun.
I hope everyone listening has enjoyed it as well. And I hope everyone has an amazing remainder of your day, evening, or morning, depending on your time zone, and we'll catch you in the next episode.
If you enjoyed that conversation and want to hear more, be sure to head over to youtube.com/waveloki, Loki's sort of C, or waveloki.com/nohitpodcast.